Hello and welcome to the Icecast. My name is Shane Chebsey. On the Icecast, we talk to comic artists, writers and publishers about their work, their lives and everything in between. And this week on the Icecast, we've got a special episode because it was originally recorded as part of the Icecast live shows. Now, you might not be aware of the Icecast live shows, but basically, obviously, they're live shows that go out across YouTube, Twitch and Facebook Live. And they go out pretty much every Thursday and Friday at 8 p.m. GMT. This episode was recorded because we wanted to allow the audio fans to also enjoy it. So it's pretty unedited, it's warts and all, recorded live, and it's featuring my co-host Lucy Orchard and special guest Declan Shalvey. And it was a great chat we had with Declan about not just his Immortal Hulk book that he was promoting at the time, but also about some of his other work and about his early career. So it really does fit in with the Icecast audio show as well. So we thought you may enjoy it. So without any further ado, here is Declan Shalvey on the Icecast. Hello and welcome to the Icecast Live. And tonight on the Icecast, we have co-host Lucy Orchard and special guest Declan Shalvey. Good evening, guys.
How's it going?
Very well, very well. Yeah, it's a pleasure to have you on, mate.
Oh, thanks for having me.
We had to twist Lucy's arm to get her on to talk to you tonight. You know, it was a real effort. She was like,
"Well, she's met me before, so I can appreciate that." Most people need to be convinced to talk to me a second time.
We were talking a little bit offline about how you guys met, and oh gosh, there's some stories there. Lucy, you were saying that you were bench pressed by Esad Ribic. Was that true?
I used to be so thin.
We all used to be so thin.
Actually, I've got a good one of you, Deck. Actually, I remember you break dancing in Northern Ireland at a show there.
Oh,
I was very impressed.
Oh, how Northern Ireland has changed.
I was very impressed, mate. It was good breakdancing.
I bust it out now and then when I'm drunk enough, and people aren't expecting it, that's for sure. Yeah.
No, I was really surprised. Everyone else was doing the usual dad dancing, you know.
Yeah.
I think Jock was there, Will Simpson, you know, we were all having a good jive.
And yeah, I mean, they were all big names, so I had to make a name for myself somehow. So, you know, that's a busted move.
It's when Andy Diggle starts body popping. Everyone's like, calm it down.
Feels like a million years ago since those nights.
Oh, yeah, it is a long time ago.
About March last year, just before Little Pando happened, I was like, I have not been to a comic convention in so long. I want to get the band back together. And I was like, we could all, because we never really went to the panels or the convention halls. We basically, unless it was to take somebody who was having a hangover, or like an emergency Guinness or something, we sort of go in, get our tickets, buy a t-shirt, buy one special hologram comic, get back to the pub. That was basically what we did. And I missed it so much. I was thinking, right, we're going to set up a Facebook group. I want all the old faces to be there. And then, bam, bam.
Yeah. We'll be back.
I mean, I guess the question is for a lot of people is when will that be? Like, because I know that, I think we're not as on top of vaccinations as much as you guys are, so I don't even know when I'd leave the country. I mean, I'm gagging to, but who knows? But yeah, it'll come back. I mean, I was listening to some podcast or something where there were somebody was suggesting that it'll be like the Roaring Twenties. You know, everyone's going to be licking doorknobs and licking people's faces, and you know, like everyone's just going to just wild abandon. Except we will all be like 40. You know?
The last days of Rome, the middle-aged version.
I survived lockdown and coronavirus, escaped coronavirus, only to like die of liver failure 2 years later.
I think that's going to happen to quite a few people, actually, mate.
Yeah. And all you need to do is focus on hygiene at comic conventions. Do you remember Bristol? Like how at the top you have those little windows that you've got a 40-foot pole that you do that, and then the window just does this.
Yeah. I just remember like just sweat. You'd just be like dripping. But well, especially because in Bristol, it used to be kind of at the time of year where the weather would be nice.
Yeah.
But it was just like, which was great. But then when you're in that room, it was like an oven. You know?
The cattle shed, I think we called it in a sort of affectionate way.
Yeah, it's weird how you can get kind of, after years of going to shows, how you can get kind of nostalgic for different types of, because like, you know, the ice shows, it would be different to say Thought Bubble or to when I remember on to Kapow once or other ones. You know, I mean, they all had their own kind of personalities, you know, and you kind of miss what's different about each of them.
Yeah. We took them for granted a little bit, I think, didn't we? That's the thing.
Well, definitely by the end, I mean, they were going mad. There were so many shows. I did, I did nearly a show a month the year before last, just because I just kind of wanted to get the fuck out of the house and go do things. I remember I did something in Portland. I did a retailer kind of conference in, it was a year ago now. And then there was one show in the States. I came home and then coronavirus happened. I remember thinking to myself, I was like, next year, I'm going to go easy on the shows. And boy, did I go easy on the shows. I think everybody else did too.
Yeah, extremely. Yeah, they'll be back, mate. They'll be back. Going back, actually, into the mists of time, I was sort of recapping in my head the first time I encountered your artwork. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, it was on Hero Killers, written by Andy Winter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was, I mean, that was the very first comic I had published. So you're right there from the start.
Wow. Yeah.
I remember when I'm in American conventions and sometimes that pops out of nowhere. I'm like, where did you find this? You know? But yeah, I went to Bristol Convention was the first real convention I went to. I went to one in Belfast, which is my first time in the north of Ireland, and I was terrified. Just because they talk so aggressively. No, it was PJ Holden, and he gave me my first portfolio review, and he was telling me there were shows in the UK. And I went to Bristol. It was my first time ever going to the UK on my own. I would have been 21, I guess. I was bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. And from meeting Andy at the Bristol show, he basically said, look, if you draw a comic, I'll publish it. Like, he wasn't able to pay me, but he was able to like put the money into publishing it. And sure enough, he did. And I think it won the Eagle Award.
It did, mate.
Year.
Yeah. 2006.
I think it was. Yeah, I think, it was actually. Yeah, that sounds right. And I've been coasting on that ever since. I mean, so I was just thinking about the UK shows and I would be so drunk. I remember when we won. And Andy had this really nice speech about how, say, all his heroes won an Eagle Award, like Alan Moore and all that. And I was like nervous and drunk. And I remembered a friend of mine wrote something in our college goodbye thing that I thought was hilarious. So I thought I was going to do that. And I said, like, oh, thanks to everybody who voted for me. And those who didn't, thanks for nothing. And I walked off.
I remember that. That was pure class.
Lethal. Absolutely
little. Like I would not have had the balls to do that, except the amount of things I've done for the laugh, which could have. I remember an ex-girlfriend of mine won an Eisner Award, and I accepted it for her, and I remember saying something like, "You know, I collaborate with her on different books, and in the bedroom." And,
you're in our bed.
But like, you know, the joke's there. I can't let go. If I think the joke, I just can't let it go. I can't say it's done me well in life because I'm single now, so that probably explains that.
Oh well,
I'm single now, and I only ever won one Eagle Award, so
that'll be your epitaph.
I'm noticing a running theme here.
Just found this.
Oh, look at that.
Jesus
look
Christ.
How young and that attractive young man. We used to be.
I actually think I look really good looking there.
You wow. Hey, mate.
You look like a football player.
You're from the neck up. Wow, I've aged horribly, but that's you know, I wish I knew I was that hot back then.
I think if we all had a time machine, I think the first rule you should have is you go back about 10 years and you tell yourself, you look fucking great. Yeah. Your skin looks great. Your figure looks great. Your eyes have happiness.
No,
there's still happiness in your eyes. And then just leave.
Yeah, you go one. Yeah, you look fantastic. Like, you're young and hot. Two, you fuck these people. Whoever you're worried about,
you will never meet these people again.
Yeah. They mean nothing. Like, you know, they, why do you care? Why do you care what they think?
And then just one, like, as you're about to leave, and don't lend him money.
Yeah. Yeah. We've all got one of those. Oh dear. So, you totally put me off track now, Lucy.
Sorry, I'm sorry, mate. That's what I do. If you let me talk, I'll just.
But it's quite funny, isn't it? It's quite funny because those moments when you say those stupid things tend to be the moments that are in public when you've had a bit to drink, yeah. You know, and the rest of the population don't know that you're this shy, retiring, polite guy who just, you know, break dances now and again.
Well, I mean, I think it's definitely true. I think you always assume everybody else knows what the hell they're doing, but the same thing, like with comics people, even those who are really well known, we're all weirdos. It's just some of us hide it better than others. We all basically grew up reading stuff and people. I mean, I hate the youth of today because they don't have the same stigma about liking cool things. You know, like, I used to get shit on the bus if I had a comic. I remember in school I had a comic and somebody said, oh, what's that? I said, it's a comic. Like, oh, that's cool. You're not reading it though, right? You know, as if there was something wrong with me if I would read. Like, I know I'm being simplistic. I'm sure, like, kids get crap in all kinds of ways now, but liking cool things doesn't seem to be a problem anymore. Whereas we would have grown up with having to, like, hide that, and then you end up in social situations where we're all very similar and we're all, like, drinking and saying stupid things and like being socially awkward but covering it up and probably overcompensating in lots of ways. We're all nuts.
We all learn that one, don't we? How to overcompensate, and then we suffer for it later on.
Yeah, well, look, I remember, like, the first Bristol shows. I was way too nervous to talk to, like, Sean Phillips or Duncan Fogredo or anyone. Like, now I wouldn't give a shit. Like, well, no, that's not true. If it's somebody I respect, it sounds like I don't respect people.
Keep digging.
Yeah, look, this
we'll
is
cut
why
this
I
out
am.
Of the edit. We'll edit this out.
No, it's so live.
I'll probably say it again in a minute. There's artists who I like really love that I probably would be a little bit nervous around. But but, like, you know, over the years, I realized, like, it's when I realized that somebody was like being like that with me, was being nervous. I realized, wow, this. I mean, it's all perception. Like, you know, this kid does not know that I'm a complete idiot. You know. So it's all about hiding that now, I guess.
Do you get that, Deck? Do you get sort of people coming up to you quite nervous at conventions when you're sketching and stuff like that?
Yeah, I'm sure. I don't notice things at all. Like, you need to tell me something. It had to be written on your head for me to understand. But you can definitely pick up on some people, you know, that are a bit more nervous. But but sure, like, I'd like to think I'm fairly personable, so I'll crack a joke or something, or just get talking to them. You know, once you actually ask people some questions and they kind of feel a bit more comfortable, it's great. I actually like chatting to people at shows. Sure, it's one of my only social outlets. So. You know, even before, like, all this stuff, I would be working so much to make the time. Like, you know, like, I'm sure you know yourself, when you'd be inviting people to shows, you could say yes, but, like, you need to really go, like, do I have the time to clear a weekend away? And, like, because then when you come back from shows, you're wrecked. It's not like you just go back to work straight away. So I used to just say yes all the time, and then you're like, how knackered will I be in 2 months after a weekend in Birmingham? You know.
But there are some guys. I remember we had Olivier Capel in, and he was working at the show. You know, in the evening, after he'd had a couple of drinks, he'd go up to his hotel and he'd knock out half a page. I don't know how people do that. It's just
it happens. Well, he can do anything, basically. But I think what happened, I know that William, I kind of came up at the Birmingham show. I remember the first time me and some of my Irish mates were sitting at a table together. It was Will Spiney and Stephen Mooney. And that's the first time we ever charged for sketches. I used to do A4 full figure sketches for free because I'm trying to push the book, you know? So we said, like, you know, let's charge something. You know, nothing crazy, but, like, charge something. We charged a fiver. And so I was doing fivers for A4 full figures. And like we went back to the hotel and we're like, man, we've fucking drinking money now. Like, this is great. You know? But like I'd been to American shows and it's you know, whenever I have American friends coming over to UK shows, I try to let them know that it's just culturally very different. It's changed. People are definitely charging and stuff now. And I think that they should, but it's a different environment. Like I'd say to them, like, you're not gonna make money. You'll come over and probably like, you know, they'll look after you and you'll have to cover your costs and you'll have a good time. But like, it's not like you go to an American show and you see people like work. I personally, like whenever I go to New York Comic Con or something, I'm working at the table. Like I'll do sketches. Don't do as many these days, but I'll push the books and I'll do portfolio reviews. I'll do time at the table. But when the show's over, I'm fucking going to the pub, like, you know?
Yeah.
I didn't fly that far to work my ass off. I can work my ass off at home, you know? I'm there to see people and have friends. And I think it helped once I kind of got to a stage in my career where I didn't have to worry about like meeting people or getting
the
to
networking
be a certain
side of it.
But you mean it's a part of it, you know, it's a huge part of it. And once I got to a point where I realized I actually don't have to meet anyone. I can just kind of like meet someone I want to hang out with for a while, you know, for that and go with or whatever. Like, so civilized now, but that's been great. Cause like, I can feel I can catch up with people in a way that before, you'd be hustling too much. But I see the guys going up to the hotel rooms and I do see the point. They'll make money that they bring home and they feed their kids, you know? But I don't think long-term like that. I just need to feed myself. So
have I got enough for beer tonight? Yeah.
It means a lot to the fans though. As somebody's on the other side of the table. Mm-hmm. I've been to New York Comic Convention. And I've looked at the tables and I've been like, right, I've got enough money for one sketch because they start high on their prices.
They're expensive, aren't they?
And what's the old guy that did Swamp Thing? Let the ads let me know.
The old guy that did Swamp Thing.
They'd have to be more specific.
Yeah, there's a couple of old guys that did Swamp Thing, actually.
He was white. He was white.
Oh, good.
Oh, that narrows it down.
And he was white. Very bad temper. And he basically had a pack of playing cards that were sort of half drawn. And for about $30, he would do just about five or six strokes on it. And at my comic conventions, you catch up, you have a little bit of a chat. Like, fan, you know, you stand there and you go, hello.
Yeah.
And they sort of look up every now and again and they'll draw and they'll go, thanks for being a fan.
If I can say, in defense of angry white artists, that sounds like some kind of manifesto. You know, those scenarios are really different. I found it myself where it's like I was just doing what I do these days, or what I did these days was like I'm going to head sketch for an hour and then I'm done. So you know, if you want to queue, cool, and I'll do as many as I can, and then I'm done, and I'm not drawing the rest of the day because. You know, the American shows, they're high pressure environments. They're long days of really, really slogging. The British shows there's work definitely, but like it's not as intense. So it's much easier to like have a chat with a kid for 15 minutes who's got a portfolio. You know, you're not gonna go, this is bullshit. Like you can give people the time where you can actually have a social interaction. And it is much harder at American shows. That's why I do that thing where it's an hour of drawing and I can do like the businessy side of it, where if somebody wants something, they can get something. Otherwise, I'm at the table and you won't have a chat. Grand. It's the one way I was able to find that I could like deal with the demand of one thing and still have it be something that I can kind of walk away having enjoyed, you know? Because also I feel I can talk to somebody about a book for 10 minutes, no problem, and they'll get the book. A drawing is going to take like a commission is going to take like an hour or something. A head sketch is going to take like 20 minutes. So it's who are you going to please? X amount of people who may not even buy your stuff. They just want a drawing, you know, or more chance of people who actually, you know, like the people buying a book, the royalties is how I make a living, you know? And I want, if they buy that book, then hopefully they come back for the next book when I'm not at the convention. For me, it's kind of hopefully like building a level of investment in the creator that they like, you know? And I think you can spend a time at drawing and for all you know, that guy's selling it down the end of the hall. You have no idea.
In America, I felt like everybody was getting a drawing to sell. Whereas in the UK, people are going to lunch out on, oh my God, Declan, Declan spoke to me when I got the painting, and then like you go, oh, you see that comic here? That's painted by that's done by Declan. I met him at con. We're very different creatures.
Well, I mean, no, that is true, but there's more crossover than you think, because there are definitely people who are shilling at UK shows as well. But I think there, you know, UK fans are more grateful of people who make the time. That's what I feel. If you go, I think sometimes if I go to a show, I'll try not go the following year, because I've gone to shows like every year in a row, and then you realize they don't give a shit because they've met you 15 times. So, you know, best to kind of space it out a little bit sometimes.
But I think
in the UK and stuff, people don't expect it as much, especially if it's like a UK guest, like an Olivier Coipel or something, you know. Because I remember when, sure, I'm sure you know yourself, like when you're arranging these things, it can't just be US, or it can't be just UK guests, because people will not appreciate them.
No, they expect a variance, you know, at least if you, at a certain level. I mean, there are some shows that just sell themselves on it's all UK guests, which is fine. Yeah. And that's but once you start calling yourself an international event, which is what we do, you know, and lots of other events do that, you've got to have variance, haven't you?
I think so. I mean, I think your bread and butter are the UK guys, for your perspective, because they're more affordable to bring. You know, they're coming from down the road or something. I do think people can take it for granted as well, though. You know, it's like, why isn't Sean Phillips here this year? It's like, well, he was here last year and the year before and the year before. And like, I don't know, his son's getting married or something. Like, you know, people have lives people can take advantage. But like, you know, you can't just do a show that's all international guests, because that's not affordable either. No. Also, if you did, people would totally take that for granted as well. So you got to.
Oh yeah,
it's a balancing act. Like,
I mean, we get that because even though we do, you know, try and do as many international people as we can, we still get people saying, you know, oh, you haven't got this many Americans this year, or there's not many people from Europe this year, and so you're never going to please everyone all the time, you know.
No, I mean, if someone's not complaining, then you're doing something wrong.
Yeah, definitely. Going back to comics, which is what we probably should. Oh, right,
yeah, sure, whatever.
Sorry.
How did you go from being very successful indie artist to, you know, breaking through into, because you started working with Marvel, I think it was about 2010, but you did some stuff with Boom. Was it something with Boom just before that?
Yeah,
was that your way in?
Effectively. Well, I will say the Birmingham show, can't remember which year it was, but I remember you guys were the first to actually ever have me as a guest at a show.
Yeah.
So like, that's why like I'll always get back onto you, because I'll always appreciate that. But I think what happened was, after Hero Killers, there was a comic in Ireland where Stephen Mooney was drawing it, and he was leaving it because he got work at an American company. So he suggested me to do it. So that was my first like job, and he's never let me forget it to this day. I wish I'd never done it. I did that for a while, and I was in Scotland for a while doing that, and then I got I had a portfolio review at Bristol, probably the last Bristol that happened, and that was with Classical Comics, and they were doing like they were doing adaptations of classic books like Macbeth and things, and I'd met John Howard in Scotland, and I think he put a good word in for me. I had that review, and I got a Frankenstein graphic novel, so I did that, and then I was working on a Sweeney Todd book when I got an email from Boom Studios, and they were doing 28 Days Later. So I did a test page for that. Didn't get the job. Somebody else got it. But then whoever did get the job, I think got a job at Marvel. So good old, you know, seconds right after first. So I got right in there. And then, I did that for about a year. But what happened around the same time was I was on, like, me and the Irish lads had an Irish sketch blog, Eclectic Mix. And I was on another sketch blog with American artists called Comic Twart. And I think that got me a lot of exposure, because there was a lot of, like, Chris Somney was on there. Who else was kind of Mike Hawthorne and Tom Fowler, guys who were already kind of in the industry. So I think I kind of snuck in there somehow. And when I went to the States with issues of 28 Days Later under my belt, and people had known me from the sketch blog, it was Jeff Parker who was writing Thunderbolts at Marvel. He asked if I wanted him to send my work to Marvel. And I said no. I got all Irish about it. I was like, ah, no. Like,
I got all Irish about it.
Yeah, no, I can't let you do that. That's terribly rude. Oh. And of course, Americans don't understand that self-deprecating thing. And he was like, it's not rude. I'm offering. You know, he was being nice. And it took a Canadian friend to pull me aside. And he said, he's asking something nice. Don't be a fucking idiot. Say yes, please.
Like a gateway translator.
Yeah, so exactly. You need that translation from, you know, it's sort of halfway, isn't it? Irish, American, and then you've got a Canadian in the middle who understands both. Just
Well, because, I mean, look, I noticed it a lot. I mean, now I'm an egotistical wanker, but I had to pretend to be an egotistical wanker, and I ultimately fulfilled that role. But it was about, do you know what happened? It happened, I probably shouldn't say that, but like there's times where you do something that maybe you don't feel great about, but it's done. And if somebody says, I mean, you learned this at shows, somebody says, oh, I really like your work in X, and if you don't like it, no one's going to walk away happy by you going, actually, you know what, I'm not really happy with that. Like, I'm not happy with how it printed. The editor was an asshole. Those kind of stories, you know, people who enjoy work don't like hearing that. No. So instead of like you being honest where you think that you're being like genuine, you're actually kind of fucking it up for people. You know, you're just you're taking the thing that they like and attaching negativity to it. So I just kind of, you know, learned to just shut up, you know, keep aim that inner hate inside, bury it deep down inside. And it definitely won't blow up at a weird moment.
when you've had too much to drink.
Yeah, well, like, you know, I guess basically just getting over yourself a little and letting people like who like the, like they've bought the stuff, like they enjoyed it. Why ruin that for them? You know, not that I have lots of terrible gigs or anything like that, but I noticed that like British and Irish people did that a lot, and you'd notice more at American shows where I found that like in American shows, people who are like trying to get their stuff in portfolios, they were kind of just more businessy about it, which isn't bad because it is kind of a job review, you know.
So you just positive. Go, you know, I'm positive about their work. You know, I find that with the American guys. Yeah, well, they're full of positivity, aren't they?
If I'm shooting on my own work, why would you pay me to do it? You know? I have a friend, and their wife said, if I ever see them doing it, to give him a punch in the head, because he'd argue with you why it wasn't good. You know, it's like and I think we're bad for that on this side of the
Marvel planet. Must like you because they gave you, like, what did they call it? A monograph.
Yeah, that was...
They showcased our boy Declan here. They made him a special book.
In a special book.
Yeah, I think I just managed to sneak my way in there. Because you look at the other people, they're actual big names, and somehow I...
See, he's doing it now. Well, you're doing it now. You put yourself down without even realising it.
Am I, though, or am I just actually being accurate? Let me see. Well. Esad Ribic, Adi Granov, Stuart Immonen,
one of my favorites. Charlie.
Like, you know.
And how many people are there on the globe? I mean, if you're fourth, I mean, I'm probably, 9,000,000,000,000,000th person, because I can draw a really good Beto. No one's giving me a monograph, mate.
Yeah, you're in good company
You know what, Lucy? Not with that attitude. All right. That's your first mistake. All right. What do we learn from Obama? Yes, you can.
Yes, I can.
Brilliant.
That was my rough plan from kind of like indie UK stuff to American stuff, which is interesting because I talked to some people and they're like, Americans assumed that I worked at 2000 AD for years, which I never have. I've never.
Well, you're meant to.
That's the rite of passage, isn't it?
Well, it is, but I'm not British. I'm Irish, so I struck my own path. I weirdly circumvented what would have been seen as the kind of the road to American comics. But it's weird. I mean, you know, that's how I broke in. But then, as they say, the story is once you break in, the door closes behind you, and somebody else has to find their own path because things keep changing. You know, there were sketch blogs when I was breaking in. They don't really exist anymore.
No,
you know, Tumblr, blogger destroyed. Sorry.
God bless the blog. Now it's all Instagram fucking stories.
Consigned to history, isn't it, the blog now?
Well, you know what I do is I have a newsletter that I do every 2 weeks, and I like doing it because, it's impossible to really communicate with people through Twitter and Instagram. I think you used to be able, the early days of Twitter, you used to be able to have chats with people. Now, if you had a slight conversation with a mate, you've got an audience of maybe a few hundred people who are like, I can't believe you said that, or taking issue with anything. So, you know, I just don't do that anymore. But what I try to do with the newsletter is you have to subscribe to read it. So, one, you have to be interested in my stuff, because it costs nothing to hit follow on Twitter and still be a see you next Tuesday. Whereas the thing with the newsletter, if you really like my stuff, you must really like my stuff if you're going to get an email from me every 2 weeks. And in it, I try and like talk a bit more honestly, like about what I'm working on, or tease things that I'm working on, stuff like that. So it's more for a kind of a smaller audience of people who are more into your stuff. And it's nice, because I liked blogging when I was starting out. I had a Blogspot, and it's a nice, it's also, as a writer, it's a nice thing to kind of do every couple of weeks. It's I don't know, it feels a bit more sincere than the social media stuff, which is, you just pump stuff out. I actually talked to an artist friend of mine, Joe, who's drawn the new book. He I posted something just saying how great he was and showed his stuff, and he emailed me saying like, I can't do stuff like that, have a hard time bigging myself up because I don't want to seem like an asshole. And I wrote back, it's like, well, I am long past that stage. Sorry. No problem. No problem being thought of as an asshole. But as I said to him in the email, I'm like, we're not on those platforms for our health.
Definitely. We've got a couple of little comments that I didn't catch before. From Chris: meeting creators and then turn out to be great means a lot, and you're more likely to follow their work.
Yes.
Spot on. That's pretty much what you were saying. Yeah.
I have this thing where she's not going to see this, as a matter. My mom will she will judge things she wants to see based on if she'd like them or not on Graham Norton.
Why not? It's a buyer's market.
There was one, because the thing with us anyway, I imagine you're similar too, is you want to know if somebody's sound. You know, if you don't want to, you just want to know that the person on the show that you like is actually a good, you know, somebody could have a pint with. I remember there was one film I wanted to go see, and I was saying to my mom, I was like, I'm going to go see that. She's like, nah, he was on Graham Norton. There was no crack in him. You know, there was no fun, you know. Whereas if Tom Hanks is on it, or Sandra Bullock, she's like, whatever that film is, I'm going to go see it now, because because they're great. And it's I have a bit of sympathy for people who do those appearances. Could you imagine, as an American, appearing on that show and like, you think everyone's nuts, you know, like whether or not you're sound, you could understand if someone's like, what the hell is going on? When you're used to, like, if you're in America, you're used to like chat shows where they ask you
three minute window and
everyone questions.
I remember, I'm totally going off the trend here, but I remember reading, you might, I don't know if you saw it, it was a great thing on YouTube once where it was Mila Kunis, and she was being interviewed by this lad for radio, and it wasn't his job, he was just kind of winging it. And he had pre-approved questions, but he just kind of wanted to talk to her. And you could hear the bosses off camera going like, ask her the questions in the card. And she went, look, I know I've done 50 of these. I know all the questions. And she just listed like, yes, it was great to work with this director. I love the material. The script was great. Now, what about that football team? You know, like... He was going like, oh yeah, we're going to go to Burnley. I don't know, whatever the hell it was. And he's like, we're going late. You can come if you want.
Oh, she was brilliant.
Like, she was like, I would. She's like, I can't. I would love to. Because you could tell she's done these junkets 50 times.
Getting tired of all those same questions over and over. Yeah.
So like, you're really great. Why are you great?
There's a lot of that, isn't there?
It's like my mate Tim, like, he fancies the arse off you, or like things like that. And you could just tell it broke all of the kind of like artifice that she'd had to deal with that day. You should look it up on YouTube. I'm gonna have to watch that.
I love stuff like that. And it's nice, isn't it, when you get an interview like that, or an interviewer who is just like a little bit more chatty, a little bit more sort of informal, and they ask questions that you're not expecting. Some of the questions you're not expecting. Sometimes it can be a bit of a shock if it's something you don't want to talk about.
But... like, it's kind of tough too, but everyone has to mind what they say so much. You know, like, because, you know, people can be assholes or whatnot, but you can say something completely innocent and some just be interpreted the wrong way. And I personally love interviews with like writers or directors or actors, whatever it is, where like, you know, they're shooting from the hip and they're straight up. And it just, you can tell, you know, and you know, I don't blame any actor for being more protected, because like, you never know what something is like. It must be a nightmare every time you have to do it.
Oh, yeah.
So, skip the end, Declan. Yeah. Who do you prefer, Marvel or DC?
Who pays me more regularly? That would be Marvel. I'm all about Marvel. No, I like them both. I was traditionally more of a Marvel fan growing up. It was Spider-Man and X-Men and Batman. You know, so it was more. It wasn't that Batman was DC. It was Batman. I liked, there was a really cool Superman cartoon when I was a kid, very young, that I really liked. But I think I got more into the Marvel stuff because I just had more access to it. You know, the Panini, when I was with like 13 or 14, Panini started doing those reprints. And for somebody who couldn't, but I couldn't really get comics where I was from in the west of Ireland, but they were in newsagents every month. So it was like reading three American comics in one, which was amazing. Like, and every month too. So that was huge for me. But yeah, I just kind of had more access to Marvel stuff. And you know, I think it was like more Marvel comics, but more DC graphic novels, because I had kind of a lot of those.
I'd agree with that completely.
We always had really good Wales,
we weren't overrun with comics, and it really was a case of there was DC was graphic novels, Marvel was individuals.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, well, I think DC tend to still be better with the graphic novel stuff, as in they keep it in stock better, and they do the prestige format stuff, you know. And Marvel are doing bits and bobs of it, which I'm glad to see, because I love that stuff.
Did you do Groot before Groot was famous?
No. I did Groot covers. The movie had been out by then, because I honestly didn't know who the hell Groot was.
It's a fucking
not many people did. Not even many Marvel fans.
No, I remember. I remember Annihilation was when I was like, I think I was big into Ultimates and stuff. Annihilation. Everybody was telling me. Or everywhere I heard, was listening, everyone was saying, like, that was great. I just never got around to reading it. So I was aware of the characters, but I mean, you know, that Guardians film was fantastic. So, you know, I started reading Guardians comics after that. But I think I'm the first person who got to draw Baby Groot.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because the comics, the film had come out, and then there was the bit at the end. Yeah. And then this Groot miniseries came out, and they had him as a baby in one issue. So I think the last issue of the miniseries, I got to do a baby Groot with a kind of a laser gun. Looking
have you got any of that original artwork still left to sell, or have you already schlepped it out?
I mean, if people were going to buy it, I would have schlepped it out for sure. I'd say there's a couple. I mean, there were only covers, so there was only five covers. Some of them definitely sold, but good luck. I'd say one or two still exist. But
you might have a sale there, mate. You might have a sale.
Yeah, why not? But yeah, I liked it because I felt like I was kind of drawing the Iron Giant when I was drawing Groot. I just I know it's the same voice, but that's not why.
I like the link though. I like that. Yeah. I mean, that was awesome film, wasn't it? The Iron Giant.
Well, no, it was fantastic. It was great. You know, it's what I like. You know, the Marvel DC thing I think is a bit blur, but I will say the. As in for comics, like I want to read a good story. You know, it doesn't matter who's publishing it, basically, but or who's, you know, more important to me, who's drawing it and writing it. But the films, the Marvel films specifically, I think have done such a great job of tapping into like what works for the characters. And you know, Ant-Man was a heist film. Guardians of the Galaxy was a sci-fi adventure. Winter Soldier was an espionage. Like it's a superhero version of all those things. And that's why I like. Winter Soldier is my favorite one, but they're not all just superhero films. They took advantage of what like works for those different different IPs, and just you know built things so well. I've copped out on the DC stuff after Man of Steel. I just wasn't into it, and it looked like everything they were doing was more of that. So I was like, it's just not for me.
Yeah, you know? It was more of that. Even more so, you know. I mean, I don't know if you've watched it, but the Batman versus Superman, it was like darker.
I went to go see Man of Steel. I was skeptical because I didn't like Watchmen, which just Zack Snyder had done. I really didn't like it.
And
I thought it looked really cool. Like it looked amazing.
It
like,
looked
I think
beautiful.
Really but I've read that book and I didn't need to see it. Just kind of. It was a weird thing when they did this that Watchmen TV show, because I saw everybody complaining with the trailer because it looked nothing like what was in the book. But I was like, good. Like, we've already seen what happened. So do something totally different and weird. And
I didn't like the first one.
I thought that show was really interesting. I'd much prefer somebody to use the concept rather than just show me the thing that I've already seen, because that's, you know.
It's never going to match the book, is it? You're never going to match that.
It's never going to match. My voice nearly broke there. It's never going to match the book, but also, like, it's a different medium, so it shouldn't necessarily. It shouldn't be exactly the same.
They were really clear in all the interviews. They were like, this is not the book. This is essence of. This is inspired by. This is. Move on, people. And everyone's like, it's not like the same thing. Like, we've just explained this to you. What are you? Yeah. We know you can read.
I think the problem with a lot of franchises, they don't move forward. And again, to be fair to Marvel, they have done that. They're moving forward the whole time rather than, you know, I don't really want to see Batman's origin again, you know?
No. I mean, or Spider-Man's. I don't want to see Spider-Man's again. Oh, really? I don't want to see Uncle Ben die again. I can't stand it.
My brother actually said to me, oh, there's a new Spider-Man out. And I was like, well, do you want to watch it? And he was like, if I see a kid bitten by a fucking spider again, like, we get it. Ooh, he gets bitten. Now what?
Well, I mean, when you think about it, though, it is kind of mad we're even having this conversation. I saw Man of Steel. I was very skeptical. I thought the trailer looked great and the cast were amazing, but I hated the film. Now, for me, I could tell Batman and Superman was going to be the same thing. I'm just not going to go see it. You know, if someone wants to watch
it, so many hours of your life, isn't there?
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's not bad, but like, I'm really, really busy. If I'm going to go see something, I want to be 70% sure I'm going to enjoy it. I was 70% sure I wasn't going to enjoy it. So what? Now, look, I'm not going to crap on the film because I haven't seen it. But, like, it seems to have been exactly what I thought it was going to be. Mm. I didn't see it. It's fine, whatever, you know. But like, it is weird to me that I'm deliberately skipping films based on comic books now. Whereas when I was a kid, I remember I couldn't see Batman and Robin because my mom couldn't take me the weeks it was out. And then it was out of the cinema.
It wasn't that long, was it?
I was so upset that I missed it.
Well, we didn't have many then, did we? We didn't have the choice, did we? When a comic book movie came out, it was like you went for it. It doesn't matter how tenuous the link was.
A life event, you know? Whereas now there's so much of it, you can kind of just pick and choose and stuff like
that. If you didn't see it in the cinema, you're talking at least a year and a half to 2 years before it came on the television.
That's
that was it. Because there wasn't a bit in between, because you could get the DVD, that'd be like 25, 30 quid.
They were expensive.
I don't care how many Easter eggs there are on it. Like, TikTok, just get it on the screen.
Yeah, I try to say that to people now. Is like when I was a kid, I was, you know, I was and massive Star Trek fan. And if you weren't in front of your TV at a certain time on a certain day, that's it. You know, and then I remember ending up to finally being able to see episodes I missed on Sky because they would repeat it once they went through the whole show. They were repeating it, and that's when I was able to, like, and that's like four years later, I was finally able to see that episode. You try to say that to people, like kids now, like it was on, and then that was it, and that was, and you might never get to see it again.
I mean, that concept is beyond them, isn't it? I mean, I've watched stuff like 20 years later that I missed on TV. And it's always a bit of an anticlimax as well, isn't it? It's like, I waited 20 years to watch that, and it was a very average episode.
There's one episode of Star Trek I didn't get to see because it was banned. There was a mention of the IRA. No, it was the mention of Ireland being reunified. Data said something like that. So UK TV wouldn't air it for a few years.
Good luck, Starfleet.
Yeah. So we've got a little question from Neil Patel. Hi, Neil. How you doing? He's a regular. He's asking, how did you pitch Flatline to Marvel? So we're jumping ahead in time there. Good question.
If we don't jump ahead, we'll never get there. How did it happen? I was doing a couple of things, and then COVID kind of drove a train right through them. I actually was available. Like, the nice thing is, like, I'm happy to say I'm generally locked down. Like, I know what I'm doing for the next year or so. And then with COVID, like, you know, the Punisher book I was doing was paused. I don't know what's going to happen with that. Everything just kind of, like, went screwy. And, I mean, I couldn't complain because it was happening to everybody, but I actually didn't have something to work on. I did something on my own to go away on. But I'd emailed Will Moss, the editor of in Immortal Hulk. We'd worked on a Nick Fury serial for Marvel that I wrote and drew a few years ago. And, you know, I'm always, you know, whenever he asks, I'm always busy. So this time I wasn't. So I just thought I'd just say, hey, look, you know, I'm not locked down on something now. I'm sure loads of people are looking for work, but like, I'm just saying, if there's something, you know, you want to do. And it turned out Marvel had planned, they had done one shot, Immortal Hulk one shot with Jeff Lemire and Mike Del Mondo. And they were planning another one. So he had the project, he just didn't have somebody for it. So I kind of just emailed him at the right time. You'd be surprised how often that's the case. You get onto somebody at the right time. And yeah, he said he asked if he wanted to write and draw it, which is, well, actually, I specifically told him I was looking to write and draw stuff. So he had that on his slate. And then I asked if I could color it as well, and he was cool with that. So yeah, it just kind of came together pretty quick, which is great, because especially after having projects go all kind of wonky, it was great to have like a chunk of story, like 30 pages to really work on and, like, outline, write, draw, ink, color. It was really nice to have something to chew on for a few months.
Yeah, I bet. And is this the first time that you've done something, you know, all of that yourself? Because I know you went into writing, I think it was about 2016, wasn't it? You started getting into writing.
Then Nick Fury serial came out, and the first graphic novel I did, I wrote and somebody else drew, Phil Barrett, was Savage Town. And they came out the same year, I think. I think it was Nick Fury and then that. And I wrote a Deadpool versus Omen Logan book.
Ah, yeah.
I think that came out, those came out similar times as Savage Town. So Nick Fury was the first thing that I wrote and drew. And it was, I mean, that's why I wanted to work with Will, because he was the first editor to offer me something to write, basically, actually. You know, not a lot of editors like to see you in a box. And understandably, because you do what you do and they like what you do, so they hire you for what you do. What was really impressed me with Will is not only did he do that, because he liked my work on Injection. I remember him saying that he thought that I had a good sense of storytelling, and he thought that I would be able to kind of like bring that to writing. And not a lot of editors will kind of go out on a limb like that, and I really appreciate it. So I always said to myself, like, I got to do something with Will again, you know. But your question was, is the first time I wrote?
The question was, is this the first time that you've written, drawn, colored?
I wrote and drew Nick Fury. I didn't color that, but in the last couple of years, I've been coloring my own work more on covers. And maybe like a one pager. I think I did a Daredevil one pager and something else. But this was the first time I actually colored like a whole set of sequential pages. And I knew asking to do that is like coloring sequential pages is not the same as coloring covers. There's way more going on that you need to account for. And I remember thinking like I could be making my life hell by doing this. But it felt like a good opportunity to take a creative leap. You know, I knew I could do it. Whether or not I could do it as well as I wanted to do it was a question. But like, I just saw the opportunity there. Rather, you know, I've worked with other colorists and I've had great results. But I kind of wanted to. I felt the desire to level up a little. And that's the first time I've done everything on a book, and it turned out. It turned out really well. I'm really happy with it.
Yeah, I mean, from what I've seen, I haven't seen the whole book yet because it's relatively new, and I haven't had a chance to pick it up. But
yeah, it came out 3 weeks, a month ago next week, I think. Yeah,
it'll be a month ago next week. Wow.
Time's flying by, man. You know?
Yeah, it is. Well, I only buy my comics monthly because I've got a local comic shop, but the way it is at the moment, you know, I can only go in.
Yeah, I'm the same. I do need to pick up what I have actually. I'm really proud of it. It was great. And also, it was nice. It was 30 pages too. So, like, you know, the fun, because I don't know if you've read Immortal Hulk, but it's excellent.
Brilliant.
There's a great concept to it as that, like, you know, Hulk can't die, but Bruce Banner can. And I thought there was something.
If you're not familiar with your version of the Hulk, Immortal Hulk, tell the people why yours is different. Well,
Immortal Hulk itself has been out for a few years, but it's Al Ewing and Joe Bennett do that book. The concept is basically that it's more of a horror book. It starts, it goes to crazy places. Like, Al's an amazing writer, but it kind of starts out basically with Bruce Banner as kind of, you know, not on the run, but like in hiding effectively. The Hulk only comes out at night. So during the day, he's Bruce Banner. Once the sun goes down, he's the Hulk. So it's a cool kind of, supernatural thing like that. And, you know, the Hulk can't die. Bruce Banner can. but when it turns dark, he's the Hulk again. And I just thought that was such a cool idea. Mm-hmm. I wanted to play with that a little. I also kind of wanted to do a story about, I don't want to kind of spoil a story or anything, but there's a little stuff about depression in there. Because, you know, I wrote it during lockdown and
write what you know.
Yeah. You know. Well, also I looked online and I just saw how plenty of people who I know and respect and are great people just losing their minds, you know.
Yeah.
We're all looking at our phones, seeing the worst things in the world, nowhere to go. Like, people are going nuts. And I kinda wanted to do something a little bit hopeful. Plus also the Hulk, I mean, it's just part of the character. Anger issues, depression, that's all places the character's gone. So I thought it would be kind of a nice way to do that. And with 30 pages, you can tell a story with a little bit more, that you can bite into a little bit more. And plus also give myself some cool visuals. I mean, if I'm going to draw something, you know, the first few pages of it is a talking head scene, but I'd managed to find a way to make it interesting. It's so like, they're by a mirror. So in the mirror, you can see the Hulk looking at them, you know, try keep it visually interesting like that.
Yeah.
But I also wanted to draw some stuff exploding and Hulk smashing, because what's the point?
You've got to have that.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I just kind of I wrote a lot of it was like, also I love drawing landscapes, so I, you know, set it in the desert, things like that. There's some really high thinking involved, but then there's some very low thinking, and it's like rocks.
Usually the Hulk has to have a catalyst moment. There has to be something that sets him off, or Bruce is finding meditation. Whereas if you get a guaranteed Hulk to Banner time over, you haven't got to deal with something. I know it sounds really stupid, but if you want to avoid aggression points where, like, there has to be someone chasing the Hulk and then he goes,
forces it then, doesn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
who in their life gets to the point where they're angry, that angry on a regular basis? Because Bruce Banner, you know, he's always getting angry, isn't he? He's always getting beaten up or put in a... I mean, on the TV series, he was always getting into these situations that forced him to change into the Hulk. And it's like, this guy's life is crazy.
But, I haven't been in that many fights, you know, so he's been... But I would say the cool thing, the thing I liked about what Al and Joe had been doing was... when the book starts, it is actually kind of similar to the show in that he's like on the road, just trying to get by, lay low and not be the Hulk. So it was a nice way of kind of channeling what I liked about the show with what I liked about what they were doing in the comics and kind of what I wanted to do. So it's weird. It's kind of like, I'm used to doing creator and stuff that's hugely satisfying. And so it's really nice. Not that I've done some stuff at Marvel that isn't hugely satisfying, but like some things that are. So it's nice. Now that, like, kind of the stuff that I get to do with Marvel is tends to, you know, the odds are is that it is really satisfying, and getting to, especially having done all that now, I definitely have the bug. I want to do more of it. I definitely want to write, draw, color some more stuff.
And
turn into a complete pretentious wanker.
How much, because it's COVID, you're obviously doing this all by email, Zoom, Teams, all that stuff. I mean, the whole point of working with Al is to be able to be in the room with Al, because he's absolutely fucking lush. Like,
I've been in the room.
Amazing. If you're a comic convention fan, Al never disappoints.
Oh, he's a great drinking partner. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I actually remember I did a show in Scotland before Al. I think Al wasn't even at. I think he just started at 2018, maybe.
All right.
But I was a total, you know, a small press guy, and I remember getting really drunk, and he is a cartoonist. He'd been doing his own kind of strips, and I remember we did some very, very, like, not printable comic jams, they took a very strange turn. I do remember thinking if we both get to be professionals, this would end our career.
Yeah. But like, but I hope it never turns up on Twitter.
Thankfully, I don't know what happened to it. Maybe he took it.
He's saving it for that day when he needs a favor.
Well, that would be self sabotage. Mutually assured destruction on his part. But I did kind of think it was funny. Years later, here we both are at Marvel, and I'm doing a project like that's his. I did very much want to honor what they're doing in the book, because especially with like body horror and stuff, I didn't get to do as much of it as I would have liked. There's a scene where he kind of Hulk kind of rips apart, but I kind of had to choose between more spectacular body horror or like telling a meaningful story. So
yeah, yeah.
You, you know, I mean, I could have gone the other way and it would have been more entertaining, but I wanted to hit some emotional beats because I just think they're so good at doing that in the book too.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the reviews, even now, even just after a month, have been really positive.
It's probably one of the best review things I've ever done. I saw one, I try not to look at reviews at all, but I think after Punisher not happening and like not having a book out in a while, I think I got insecure and started looking at reviews, and they're all been great. I think I read one that said that it was like meh, and I was like, oh my, how dare they? Haven't they seen all the other great reviews? But I have to remind, like, that's just a random, like, stop, don't look at that stuff. That's ridiculous. But no, I'm delighted. I think maybe the fact that I did everything on it, I think maybe it feels like I really did work hard on it because I did everything, you know.
Mm-hmm. We've had a comment there about, you just mentioned Punisher, from Chris. Thanks to American Right Wing for pooping on future Punisher stuff. I'm assuming he's talking about the use of the Punisher symbol there.
Yeah, I mean, it's a whole thing, but like, personally, I don't care. Like, I really, no, okay, I should probably phrase it differently. Personally, I think... I don't like anybody co-opting things. And no. I think that you can let people do it. And I feel like that's being let down. But also, you know, plenty of right-wing people like Punisher, you know? Mm. And I, like, that's if I can't begrudge, if someone's going to walk around with a Green Lantern t-shirt because they love Green Lantern, I don't think you can be angry if somebody who likes guns and Punisher wears a Punisher t-shirt. I don't like how people are receding away from something just because somebody bad did something. But that's my personal view.
Are they banning the Joker?
I mean, this is the thing, isn't it? These are fictional characters and fans can interpret those characters how they like, I guess. Mm-hmm. And you're not always going to agree with their interpretation. I mean, some people might think that Superman's a right-wing symbol, you know, because
red, white, and blue, and all that.
It depends. I think what bugs me is projecting politics onto this stuff because it's always from one person's point of view. Yeah. You could. I did a show in South Africa once talking about Superman, and I kind of made the point that is he a good thing basically, or is he a bad thing because it's all about the American way? My thought being that the American way is something that's kind of perceived as toxic in contemporary culture, but the original thing was that America's a land of prosperity where you go and you immigrants can be whatever they want to be. It's a whole new world. That's a good thing. Mm. We're looking at things through a very specific window. And, you know, I don't think that's a conservative or right-wing point of view, but I think that society is pushing some of those, you know, liberal things into a weird right-wing thing when it shouldn't be. And the more we recede from these kind of symbols and things, the more the people who you don't like will own them. And I don't want that. These things should be universal, you know. And maybe I'm just being naive and stupid, but that's where I go.
I'm on the same page.
But to disagree with the comment of like saying you can thank the right-wing people, but like they're not trying to ban it. No. You know, like, it used to be the case 20 years ago, you have right-wing people banning stuff, but you don't, that's not really happening. It's people shying away from stuff. And in some cases, understandably too, you don't want to be putting stuff out there that's toxic and negative, but it's tough when I think we're in a culture that just makes so many things toxic when it doesn't need to be.
Sing it, sister.
I totally agree. I think it's like a buzzword, isn't it? Toxic at the moment.
It is. Everything. I guess everything is a buzzword now. Like I know myself.
I used to keep that off my exes. Now it's everywhere.
I mean, to go back to comics, one of my favourite bits of work that you've done, mate, is your Moon Knight stuff. Which is, I think, around 2015. I really enjoyed the design elements and to the storytelling that you brought in there, and it felt to me like that was almost like a real turning point for you and your art. It's like you'd taken a big step forward in how you were telling a story. Was that a conscious thing at the time, or was it just a natural development?
No, it was conscious. I think that I'd been doing lots of fun superhero stuff, like Thunderbolts and But I mean, that was fun, and I was getting to draw Marvel superheroes. I was so happy. Mm-hmm. What kind of happened after that is I ended up getting some offers from DC, and I did things like Northlanders with Brian Wood, and I did Conan with Brian Wood too. And doing, I mean, those were very different types of stories. They were way more grounded. They were kind of more realistic, you know, for lack of a better term. And I kind of had a more, I guess, cinematic is the term that's used now, but kind of filmic approach. Which I didn't really do much of in the superhero stuff. Then I did Venom, more superhero stuff, and I made a Dark, yada, yada, yada. But everything I was doing at Marvel, I was coming in on as the third artist on that book. You know, somebody, they had a big name on a book, that big name left, somebody else came on and replaced them, and then I was the guy who replaced them.
Replaced the replacement.
Yeah, and I remember I was really, like, I was getting really pissed off because there was a lot of people who were starting at Marvel getting brand new books.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know, because I always Venom, I did Deadpool. I think Deadpool was one of the first books I got a lot of attention on because that character really blew up around then.
Yeah, it was popular.
But then when Moon Knight came along, one, it was a brand new book. So I felt like this is my opportunity to kind of, I really like books that have their own identity. You know, when you recognize, you could tell this page is from Batman. You can tell this page is from Daredevil. You know, it's recognized, not just the artist's work, but there's a sensibility to it. Mm. And I wanted to do that. And also, like, it was Warren Ellis, who is just one of the most amazing innovators in the medium, you know? Mm-hmm. And I remember getting really kind of worried, like, what am I going to do? This is like, because also Warren hadn't written comics in a while, so I was really shitting it.
The fact that it's a high profile book, wasn't it, at the time?
Because it was offered to me as, did I want to do Moon Knight? I'm like, cool, I get to do a new book. Yes. And I was told it was a little known UK writer. So I was thinking, maybe Sai or Kieran, because the editor was a joker. So I figured it was one of the British guys working there, and I knew Sai and Kieran. They were doing work there. That's what I thought was what it would be. And he said Warren Ellis. Like, what the? Because he'd been doing novels and shit for years. So there was total performance fucking fear there. But I think so. You know, and Warren had some bold, you know, he had structural stuff which was very, very, very distinct. And led into the visual. And I remember thinking to myself, if I can't take some fucking chances on a Warren Ellis book, then what's the point, you know?
Yeah.
And also, like, he backed me up, you know, anything I wanted to do. I remember him telling me, like, you know, that he'll, like, I probably shouldn't say that, but he made a point of saying that he would be very forceful in supporting me, which was great. But it didn't come to that because...
Oxymoron, but that's fine.
but like to have that kind of support from one, a guy who didn't fucking know me from Adam, and to be able to really take some chances on a brand new book, reinvent the character effectively.
Mm. Well, you did, didn't you? Between you, it was a total reinvention. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, look, like so much of it is down to Warren, but like I could have really dropped the ball, and I don't, you know, I think it's safe to say at this point that I didn't, but It definitely, that was I talked about leveling up earlier. That was definitely a place where I leveled up because my ambition for bolder storytelling and storytelling devices, along with my level of illustration, had bumped up over the years. You know, I started using washes, which I hadn't really been doing in my Marvel work, just because the deadlines had been, you know, tight.
Yeah.
I had a bit more space to really make it more illustrative and take some chances and. You know, there's a lesson there. You know, if you get it, if there's an opportunity to take, you can play it safe every time. It's good to take some chances, and it changed me as an artist for sure. The cover design, the character design, what we were doing with color work. Like we're still really, really proud of it.
Oh, good. You should be, mate, because it was a great book. It really was. It turned me on to. I hadn't read a Moon Knight book for many years. You know,
I never had.
Oh, really? Did you have to go back and read the old stuff?
Well, honestly,
did you admit that at the start as well?
Who the fuck's Moon Knight?
I didn't reveal it. I do get asked sometimes.
I'm not big fan of Bruce Willis.
I do get asked sometimes, like, what's my favorite version of Moon Knight by hardcore Moon Knight fans? And my answer is, like, my one. You know?
Yeah, of course.
But like, no,
what
I had read.
What does Bill Sienkiewicz know about drawing? Exactly. Eh?
No, I had read some of the Bill Sienkiewicz stuff. Actually, case in point, I've said this elsewhere, so I'm sorry if anyone's seen me repeat this. I thought that like Bill Sienkiewicz's stuff goes from like shite to god status, all in the format of the book. You know, he starts out like this kind of very traditional looking,
like a Neil Adams type approach, wasn't it? Yeah,
and then he does some experiment on a page which totally doesn't work. And I just think like it just looks terrible. And then the next page is Neil Adams again, and then the next page he experiments, and it's something like you could never have imagined.
Yeah,
and if you look through that, I'm not saying this to have a go at Bill Sienkiewicz, he's incredible. But my point is that guy was experimenting on the page. Yeah. You know, he clearly was doing a monthly book. He had to do it every day, and he could have played it safe, but now and then he would try something. It wouldn't work, but then the next time he'd refine it. And you can see his process developing and refining till it gets to the point where you see that infamous Moon Knight spread where he's like swinging over the roof of the moon. Like, but you know, you don't get to that without like making mistakes on that. And it's something I worry about, like with younger artists now, because there's a pressure to be perfect all the time.
They don't get a chance, do they, to develop like that?
No. You've got to Instagram you've got to put out everything on Instagram that's perfect, and then you got to do an Instagram for your sketchbook, which is like the kind of in process stuff. But like it's so presented as if it's perfect, you know. And I do worry that younger artists don't have a space to develop. But anyway, that's a whole other thing. But yeah, I did know the Sienkiewicz stuff. I was a big Tommy Lee Edwards fan, and he had done a mini series I really liked. And I had read the Bendis Maliev one because I love like what they did on Daredevil. But our thing was so different. Like you didn't really. You know, you didn't need to read anything beforehand, which is what I liked about it. It was so fresh.
Yeah.
But I did have pressure because like Daredevil is my ultimate goal. I'd love to do that book. And for me, it was like, okay, well, I may never ever get to do Daredevil, so I'm going to make this book my Daredevil, you know?
Yeah.
There was such a history of amazing artists on Moon Knight. That was intimidating. I'm like, okay, well, I got to do something. You know?
Do you wonder sometimes, because they're doing a Moon Knight TV series, aren't they, on Disney Plus?
Mm-hmm.
Is that? Do you think that there's a possibility that they could base it on what you and Warren did?
I honestly haven't a fucking clue. But
it'd be interesting, wouldn't it?
The logo they have for us, you know, it says Moon Knight. That's the logo we made for our book. Out of all the books, out of all the Moon Knight logos, the David Finch one, the that's a specific thing. Like nobody, I don't think anybody else did, but like the moon and the O in the moon, and the second one being a crescent moon.
Yeah,
that's not in any other logo. So that makes me think they might. Yeah. I think it makes sense. I mean, I think it's more accessible to do a Mr. Knight and then bring in the more superhero elements rather than...
Yeah.
But look, honestly, I don't know. I will say they're hiring interesting filmmakers. I haven't seen their stuff, but they attached a couple of directors to it, which, from what I understand, have done some very experimental films.
All right.
Which is much better than it being, like, you know, blandy, McBlandy bland, you know? So I would hope if they're going to do Moon Knight, they're going to lean into the nuttiness. And to be fair, like... I mean, even that WandaVision show, like, you can't say that was conventional.
No, that was really groundbreaking, I thought.
Yeah, like,
towards the end, it became conventional, didn't it? I don't want to spoil it for anyone.
Yeah, but like, that's such a fair criticism. But like, you know, that was always going to happen. But what you could do is they were able to mess around with the character for a while, then put it back on the board where it's going to go be, send that character on its journey. But what... You know, if you were going to do a Wanda, if someone said 10 years ago they're going to do like a Wanda Maximoff or Vision show, you would never have imagined that. Now, admittedly, they're using what was done in the comics, but like, you know, you wouldn't think they'd use what was done in the comics in the last 10 years. You'd think they would have done the original stuff or something. I am very, and that Winter Soldier Falcon show looks savage too. Like, to be fair to them, they're not doing conservative versions of those characters. They're leaning into more exciting elements of them. So, I mean, I hope they do use our stuff, but I mean, I have no idea. And also, to be fair, there's amazing Moon Knight stuff that has been done before us that is nothing like what we did. So I also can't be annoyed if they don't. But
I'm guessing like there'll be a bit of a mixture, I guess, to a certain extent, because there's so much material.
Jeff Lemire and Greg Smallwood did the more Mr. Knight stuff afterwards. So I mean, there is plenty of that material to use. It's, you know, I feel bad because I get so much good words about Moon Knight, but Greg Smallwood did way more issues than me, and he's amazing. But I'll take the credit. Don't get me wrong.
Just take the compliment, man.
Yeah. No, I'll take it. Yeah. Yeah. Me, I'm that guy. I'm signed the Moon Knight comics. So I never did. But I mean, yeah, I mean, look, it'll be class if it happened, like, you know, but but then everyone will go like, so do you make money from that? And I'll say no, because I didn't design I didn't create the character. But it would be really, it would be amazing. But even now, man, like, I worked on Deadpool, then that turned into a film. Venom, that turned into a film, which I haven't seen yet, actually.
I haven't seen either.
Well, look, how mad is it that I worked on a book and I haven't seen the film that they made of the character?
You must be very busy.
Is it mad or is it complacent?
It's probably a little bit of both. I think I was very, you know, I'd heard not great things, but I don't know. My mom said she loved it, so.
How was he on Graham Norton?
Yeah, was he good on Graham Norton?
Very good.
That Venom guy.
Yeah. I think that's as valid a way of assessing the potential of a movie as any other.
It's a fair metric. Yeah.
Yes, definitely. So we've done way over the hour, mate, because it's been an absolute pleasure and we've just chatted away and it's been really good. We have managed to talk about Hulk, which is good. I'm glad we got some of that in. There is a new book coming out, I believe.
It's called Time Before Time. It's
Are we all right to share that artwork? That
yeah,
we've got?
Yeah, that's all. It's been, yeah, the book's been announced and everything. It was announced three or four weeks ago. It's me co-writing with Roy McConville, who works at 2000 AD, and Joe Palmer, who also works at 2000 AD, with Chris O'Halloran's coloring and Hassan Osmane Arau doing the letters. Right. And it's a new Image sci-fi crime series where basically it's set, you know, in the future, where the future's so bad that you pay criminals to smuggle you out into another time.
All right. Oh, no. Time. Oh, I get it.
So it's based in 2021, then?
Well, it's not based in that year, but it's, I think that the book, in the book, you will relate to how people want to get out of the time that they're in right now. So yeah, the idea is basically like, if you want to get out of there, you have to pay this gang a certain amount of money, and they'll smuggle you back into like 1987 or 2050 or whatever it is, where the air is better, and you can basically just live your life. You know, you can't change time, but you can just kind of hide out there, basically. And you know, you'll die before anything bad happens. I'm really happy with it. Like, Joe is an amazing artist, and
I'm loving this art, mate.
Yeah, he's great. It's actually funny, him and Rory won the 2000 AD portfolio competition like a top level a few years ago. And they both won the same year. And they did a book called Writers in Blood that came out last month. But I knew Rory, so I was kind of like helping him out, just giving him some feedback and stuff. So they did a great book. And I was like, this is a great team. These guys did a really great book. They didn't have anything lined up. So I kind of like took advantage of it and said, well, me and Rory had been talking about the story. So since Roy was doing that book with them anyway, and they'd finished, I was like, well, let's keep a good thing going. We actually just wrapped up the fifth issue. So we're well ahead. And yeah, it's fun. It looks gorgeous. I think it's read some really fun kind of time travel stuff mix. I mean, it's a grounded crime story at the same time. So I think it's like The Wire meets Quantum Leap.
Ah, good pitch. Yeah. Two there series I really like. Two great series there. Very good.
It's great fun. I'm really it's been like I couldn't write it myself with the way my schedule was, but me and Rory had been talking back and forth for ages, so it's been great to kind of like you know, do the work and then have the team do it while I'm doing my other stuff too. So I it's taken a lot of pressure off the workload for me, but I mean, I love great artists, and seeing Joe's work on Write It in Blood was really great, but it was like a grounded crime story, what they did. Seeing him, like, the fashion and the design and the characters, and like, I mean, I would be exhausted drawing that thing. Very, very easy to write the words, though.
Yeah. And that's why you become a writer.
Exactly. Establishing scene of futuristic city. Full stop.
Huge double page spread with horses and soldiers, full stop. Mm-hmm.
Being an artist, like, I mean, I think the advantage I have as a writer is that I think I have a good visual sense of stuff, but like, I also know, you know, when to ask for something big and when to cut somebody some slack, you know.
Yeah.
I'm doing working on something and that I'm actually not writing, but the artist did a really good, or the writer did a really good job, because I think there's stuff in there that's a lot of work and there's stuff there that was very easy. So it kind of balances out as the same amount of work. And yeah, if I want the artist to keep drawing the book, I have to try not kill him.
But if you don't like them, he enters into an Escher universe riding a Pegasus horse.
There's a lot of writers out there with great ideas, but they do not care how it's drawn.
No. Well, as I say, we've done well over the hour, but it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you, mate. It really has.
Good to catch up. Great to see you. Definitely. See you again in another 10 years.
Yeah. I was glad that you guys were able to get reacquainted.
I've only had half a can, but, you know, next
time. It has to happen soon.
Mm. Yeah, I will be.
And I don't want it to be socially fucking distant. I want to be able to hug my mates at 1 o'clock in the morning, as we both agree that Green Lantern is the best comic ever.
I have to be very drunk.
Well, let's hope we can do that very soon, mate.
Yeah, that sounds good. Yeah, put a pin in that. It's going to happen.
Great stuff. I'll see you soon. And thanks a lot again. And have yourself a great evening.
Yeah, me too, guys. Cheers.